the OTB Podcast Network.
That's the pay-per-view yesterday, talking about Michael Deignan's piece where he wrote eloquently about the passing of his father. And the last voice you heard there was Vincent Hogan. The whole thing is available for downloads on podcast. Best place to get that is the Go Loud app, or of course you can get it on offtheball.com. Dermot Ling is with us. Dermot, I don't know. Good morning to you, first off. And I don't know if you actually heard that there, did you?
I did. I just caught the I just caught the end of it. I didn't hear the full piece.
The bit there was Vincent saying that the nurse, when he was minding his own father, as his father was telling him to tell him you love him, and it would have made his dad too uncomfortable. And it's a very Irish thing where, like, oh no, geez, you can't tell me that now. I mean, things must be really bad.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know about that really. I think that it's probably a very common thing. Definitely, is it an excuse? Not, and I don't mean that critically, but is it an excuse to say that that would have made him uncomfortable, or would the situation be so uncomfortable for you that you mightn't say it? I don't know. I think that differs from place to place. But I do know that. I suppose coming the other way down, when your father says it to you, you know, one of the things I think a son wants from their father is for them to be proud, or from their parents in general, but from the father in this case, is to be proud. And when they say it to you, if they ever say it to you, it is deeply uncomfortable, and it feels like the thing that you were seeking. And then when you get it, you're like, oh, genie, I didn't want that so much in the end. But then afterwards, when the situation fades away, and you're left with that feeling of knowing that, I think it's something that just rests deep inside of you, and is a well of something that's available to you, because, yeah, it's a good thing to know. So I wonder, does it work the other way around to tell, is that what your father wants to hear towards the end, or at any stage, for you to be able to say, you have to stand as a man in front of him and say that you love him? I'd imagine there's solace in it.
I wonder, Dermot, if actually we're getting to a point now where things have changed. Here we are. I mean, obviously that's 18 years ago, and in 2020, in the middle of a global pandemic, is communication, particularly among Irish males, getting to a point where we're like, actually, you know what? It's about time that we all told the truth.
Yeah, I suppose the conditions, Jar, isn't it what's most interesting at the moment? Like, the conditions of where we'll even get to tell that truth. I mean, is it going to be through windows? Is it going to be on Skype calls? Did we take our opportunity when we had the chance? Is this going to highlight the fact that you don't get so many opportunities all the time? And you really have to take them when they do come. And I imagine there's a lot of people are either have already, unfortunately, realized that, or they're about to realize it if the numbers and the predictions are going to be accurate. So, yeah, I think definitely it's so hard, isn't it? For other people, I don't know how to say it for other people, because everybody's in their own individual situation. But it does feel like that if you're sitting on it, like, and something like this comes along and sweeps normal away, and now we're facing, very realistically, we're facing a new normal. Definitely. I think it's time. Yeah, we have to, and I think we are dealing with it. Like, we definitely are dealing with it bit by bit. We're in maybe some feel maybe we've gone too far, where young men are too soft or too flahoolock with their feelings, and that's countenance against the stoic man, who we're also trying to kind of break down a little bit and find that middle ground. And I think that's maybe the struggle of our generation, and the younger generation at least.
I think anybody who watched your Liquid Grail recently will know that you have this beautiful setup in rural Kerry, where you're foraging for food and you're growing your own stuff. It's like the kind of perfect scenario in preparation for a situation like this.
Maybe I was preparing, Ger. Do you know, one of the things that they left out, and I was just considering it last night after I was talking to the good Owen Sheehan there, was that in the interview it came up about Off the Ball and my time there. And one of the things that didn't make the cut was how well that I was taken care of by Off the Ball and by News Talk and by you in particular, Ger, and by Garrett Hart when it was a time of struggle. And it didn't make it in, but I definitely like to acknowledge that. Now, as regards the setup, I am in the middle of moving, would you believe? I had to leave this house and I'm moving greater than 2 kilometres away, unfortunately, but we have to do it and there's no great choice in it. So we're making a few trips back west and we're setting up shop back there, and we'll start again pulling up the ground and starting to plant and continue preparations. And do you know, this all came for me by just kind of following deeper instincts. And I'm glad, or I feel at least, I don't feel hugely put out by this whole situation. And I don't mean that from the point of view of the effect that it's having on human health and the people around me, just my physical situation. It's not really affecting me a whole lot because, yeah, it's a little bit closer to how I live anyway. And one of the great struggles with that, and I think maybe it's a struggle that people might be facing, an awful lot of people might be facing at the moment, and if there was something I could say to that, is that I spent a few years now not really knowing where money is going to come from, and not knowing if I could make rent, or not knowing if I would have enough for different things to provide for my family and things like that. And the more that tension came up in me, I felt the more of a block that I was creating in going to find work and to enjoy whatever work that I did manage to find. And I had to really sit with that for quite a while and allow that feeling and that tension to just kind of just examine it and to let it fade away a little bit. And the more I'd bring it up to the surface and say, okay, there it is, what is it? It's that I feel that I'm not good enough, or it's that I feel that I'm not capable, or that my talents are useless, or whatever it is. And that I'm a bad partner and I'm a bad father or whatever. I had to like really examine those feelings and let them fall away. And I found that once I could do that, it might be a stretch for people who don't prescribe to similar beliefs that I have maybe. But once I cleared those things out, I felt that I was paving the way, opening the way for more work to come in. And that's just generally what happened. When it was really needed, it came in and it continued to come in. So it's like preparation in terms of growing food and stuff like that are really very small things, because I see like the seed shops and the sets of spuds and onions and everything else are sold out everywhere. Everybody's gone back to growing. By following instinctual life in myself, it's led me to here. And the great battles of it have been in sitting with that kind of stuff that people are probably going through a little bit more at the moment because of the uncertainty, you know.
Yeah, no, absolutely. The way you described dealing with anxiety there, I think, is kind of a toolkit for everybody. It's very difficult, though, Dermot, to hold yourself up to that constant, rigorous self-scrutiny. Like, you have to be nice to yourself at some point along the way, too.
Oh, yeah, Jeannie Mac, for sure, Ger. I don't, like, how... These are moments, like, these are just individual moments that come up in a day. They don't... You're not sitting with it, like, you're not sitting in the lotus position for the entire day or anything like that, like trying to observe these things. It's just, it might be 20 minutes, it might be 10 minutes, you know, they're very short. And in your day, then you're still going about your day in enjoying your kids or enjoying things that you enjoy doing. That self-scrutiny definitely becomes too much and leads to even greater struggles, without doubt. It's just observing what's there. It's not looking for things. It's not going hunting for more problems. It's like, okay, if something comes up and you hear a voice of criticism or you hear a voice of uncertainty, it's just to not to hide from it, I suppose, at least, you know, more often than you wouldn't if you weren't aware that that's a thing that happens to people.
Yeah, for sure. Dermot, the bit where you made the decision to be more instinctual in life, I think a lot of people would like to access some part of that now. Even the physical manifestation of it is that, as you say, seeds are sold out. So people are actually beginning to embrace a little bit of this. Now, maybe a lot of those seeds are going to sit in someone's back sheds and they'll rot. They won't actually end up you planted. You know, like the road to hell is paved with good intentions. How do people access their instinctual selves a bit more?
Well, I think that this is maybe, I think it's necessity, unfortunately, in some respects, but I think that's what this, the corona, maybe represents. You know, we'd continue, really, wouldn't we, on our path, even if we weren't quite sure and we weren't quite happy. We would continue on our path because we make our path kind of acceptable enough to ourselves, because we get our coffee in the morning and that feels good, and we have nice food around us and that feels good, and everything is kind of reasonably acceptable outside of maybe the fact that the work that you're doing might not be of any great necessity to the world in reality, or the work that you're doing doesn't feed that kind of those burning questions in your soul. And so for me, it just came out of necessity. The decision made me. I didn't really make that decision to live more instinctually. There was no choice. And I feel with coronavirus, maybe it's a little bit similar, that people have been forced to stay at home and have been forced to stop working and have been forced really to observe type of life. I think it was maybe Roland O'Gara was talking to Owen, was saying during the week about, you know, having this time now to look at what he's actually doing and to see if it's something that, you know, how acceptable it is to him or how desirable it is to him. And I think a huge amount of people are in the same situation. So I think it's just responding to life. You know, life forced me down this road in a way, and I see it's the most perfect road for me. And I think a lot more people are now going to be in that situation. So just it's there's a need, I suppose. It's not how to do it in a way, it's how not to do it. And the way not to do it is to fight it. I think that's it. We're like to resist it and say, oh, we need to get back to normal as quick as we can. It's like, just don't resist it. Like, allow it to take the shape that it's going to take. And you don't know, like, you might feel you're not skilled enough or not capable enough to do what you need to do. Even though your job is lost or your company has closed, and you're like, well, what else can I do? Like, life is just inviting you on a whole other adventure, and you will make it through because we do. And we live in a country where we look after people. And I'd say this more than ever, we really see how interconnected we are and how much compassion exists in Irish society. And I think that to maybe that fear and that uncertainty to just allow for it, but to move past it in looking forward to what new adventures in front of you. And that's easy to say, Jared. Like, that's very easy to say when it's going on and you're in the middle of it, and there's people around you dependent on you, and kids are dependent on you and stuff like that. That's no mean feat, but it's definitely, there's so much gold on the other side of that tension and that fear, I think. So life will lead you down that way. And I think I'm not grateful for the coronavirus arriving or anything like that, but I would say it's pushing people more maybe towards aligning themselves with what they actually want to be doing with their lives. Possibly. That's from the outside, I suppose.
Yeah, I think a little bit about what you're talking about is there's an opportunity here for us to re-examine what it is that binds us together. When you have somebody like Boris Johnson saying all of a sudden he actually does feel like there is a society after all, when things have turned around so much that the leader of the Tory party has now gone, actually, you know what, there is a society and we really need it. But then, you know, the world has turned on its axis quite significantly. I watched Let Go Gay last night for the first time, and there's an amazing scene at the end where you're talking about the ash dieback, and I couldn't help but be struck by the parallels of, you know, this disease which is sweeping across the world and has arrived on our shores, and how we're going to deal with it. And in a weird way, it felt like there was kind of a minor preparation in terms of your brain space about this thing which is coming to us, and we have to be prepared for it, and we all have to join in together to overcome it, or we can be completely taken over by it and not be prepared for it. And I don't know if that, I don't know if there is any kind of parallel between that, or if it was just because it was late at night on a Sunday evening and I was looking at this going, Jesus, there's something here, you know?
I think there is, Jer. And if we could use that parallel, and I was considering that last night as to how, you know, there's experts out there who know about diseases and health and proteins, which is what this COVID is, protein. And there's people who know an awful lot more about that than I do. And so it's like, how do I make what I feel relevant to people through sport? And I could, some things came to me, but actually that's probably the most significant thing that you've mentioned. So thanks for bringing it up. And I think that when it comes to something like ash dieback in the case of the ash tree, what we tend to do to beat the disease, the big bad ash dieback disease that come in, is like, how do we treat it? How do we kill it? How do we poison it? How do we win the war against it? And if you talk to like the mycologists, the people who are in nature, and I don't know how, they're not in a lab observing nature, the people who are really in nature, they will say that it's all about the health of the all. It's all about the biodiversity of the area. So we don't plant, we'll say, 100 ash trees. We plant 20 oak, 20 birch, 20 willow, and then 40 ash trees. And those 40 ash trees are going to be an awful lot healthier than the 100 that you would have planted, because the disease will just obliterate the 100, all of them. And I can't help but feel like this is similar for us, because looking at the statistics from Italy, I think it was something like 1% of people didn't have underlying conditions. And that points to maybe ill health. That points to maybe a weakness in our overall health. And are we going to tackle and win the war against the big bad disease? Or are we finally going to maybe start considering what is causing such levels of ill health in our society, like in relation to things like cancer, and then moving right down the line to things like depression and how much something like loneliness can affect people and our suicide rates. And so is it time? I read a lovely quote about the fish. The next time, it's not there now, but I have it there somewhere. It's a fish in a tank, and the disease has gotten the fish. And do we take out and isolate the fish, or do we clean the water in the tank? And I think we need to maybe start observing our overall societal health, and the things like the spraying of toxins on our food, and the health of the things. There's a lot of stuff that I suppose I've talked about already and talked about in the doc. But I think it's definitely inviting that if our focus was less on the war on disease and more on what is the health of our society, what is the health of our most vulnerable, are we prolonging life on drugs, or can we change the water in the tank? Can our overall conditions of health be a little bit purer, a little bit more natural? Would something like COVID have the effect that it's having? Because it's just another form, it's just another iteration of life, isn't it? With its own sentience, with its own desire for life, and it's going to morph into something else because we're going to develop the immunity ourselves to it anyway. But I think it points to maybe our overall health, even though we're living longer and we can have that metric in society of, well, that shows you that health is better. But if you look around and you see the amount of struggles that, you know, every time I go back to Wexford, I mean, cancer levels are there's 4 or 5 new cases in our little village every time I go back, you know. So I think that we've bigger questions in terms of health other than COVID. And I do think it's important to be able to hold the empathy for people like Michael, for my own grandparents and granduncles and grandaunties who I'm observing at the moment and trying to stay in contact with. I think it's also important that we observe what's happening around us and how a lockdown, how the situation in society can continue with the constant threat and constant fear of the big bad virus that's going to kill everybody. I think you can get a lot past in those times, and I think it's important just to remain. You just keep your eyes open to see what changes in society are happening around us, and are they going to continue? If I get the flu next year, Jar, I'm just wondering these things. You know, if I get the flu next year, should I self-isolate? Because the flu kills old people. Like, this is a fact. And if I have the flu, I could kill old people. Are old people going to have to hold back from society now, hold back from children, because children are carriers of disease? Is this, you know, what is the new normal? And when those questions are up for grabs, and when we have it falls to people. It falls now. It does. I don't think it falls to governments. I don't think it falls to organizations. It falls to people to make sure that our progress forward is one of unity and is one of physical contact that the human body, I think, needs. But for the moment, obviously, social condition, our social distancing and isolation, these things are the most effective thing to flatten the curve. But we have to keep an eye on where things are going as well, you know.
Yeah, for sure. Jeremy, it's always great accessing a little bit of your wisdom. I wish you the best of luck with the move and whatever's next for you. If anybody hasn't seen the Liquor Gale, it's worth an hour of your time. And also, anybody else should dig out the recent Keith Duggan piece that Jeremy did as well. It's always brilliant talking to you, and I keep well, man.
Lovely, Jared. Thanks very much. There's a lovely article there by Charles Eisenstein. I put it up on Twitter yesterday, and some of the ideas, I suppose, some of the things that I've been really feeling deep down about this are in that article on the coronavirus. It should be very easy to find. Charles Eisenstein. A lot of very, very valuable wisdom in it for us.
At Dermot Ling on Twitter. Good man, Dermot. Thanks a million.
That was an OTB Podcast Network presentation.